Blog Talk Radio.
Well, a pleasant good evening. Where have I heard that before? To all Mets fans, this is Rich Farrago from the Metsian Podcast, Rich known as CT Mets Fan on Twitter. And you are listening to another episode of the Metsian Podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike. So I think a lot of us Met fans were smiling this evening on the day off based on the results of the Subway Series. It always feels good to win the we'll call it what used to be called the Mayor's Trophy, right? To wear the crown of New York, at least for a couple of days. That feels good. Mets have been doing well, and we're going to get into all that. And to help me do that, I have one of my two partners in podcasting tonight. I have Mr. Mike LeColant from Brooklyn. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay, Rich. Thank you. And, wow, the Mayor's Trophy game. I was such a big fan of that game. And you had to listen on the radio. They never televised it.
Exactly. I remember listening to those games, like a 10-year-old, 12-year-old, and thinking it was like a big deal. You know, the Mets only played the Yankees in spring training, and other than the Mayor's Trophy game, and I wanted the Mets to win that game every year, sitting there by my little transistor radio listening to it. How far we've
exactly.
gone, right, Mike?
I'll say. But you know what? Give radio its credit. It's still viable.
Sure is. It most definitely is. And so tonight we don't have Sam, unfortunately. He has some work commitments. And I would like to thank Mr. Adam Siegel for providing the jingle that you heard, our intro song, and we always thank Adam for that. But we don't have Sam, but we do have a guest tonight, and that is a gentleman that you've heard before on the Metsian Podcast, Mr. Ernest Dove, hailing from the Sunshine State of Florida. And how appropriate to have him on at this point, because Ernest is an expert in the Mets minor leagues. And certainly with the trading deadline and the impending trading deadline, we could start to unpack the Mets prospects, how he sees them, and who might be tradable, who might not be. Ernest is from the radio show, and I'd like to bring him on at this point and have him say a little bit about himself and some of the work he does in the baseball world. So, Ernest, welcome. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I love it. Back on the air. I'm also, I'm part of SportsWire Radio. I'm also part of the Sports Report. We have a 24/7 all type of talk sports radio going on 24/7. I mean, they got everything. They got UK wrestlers. There's a lot of even Yankee talk, even if you're into the Yankees, on sportsinarium.com/player. But, yeah, obviously my bread and butter is my children, my minor leagues and my Mets.
There you go. Lots to talk about tonight. So as we were talking about before we went on, let's start with everything that the Mets have done since the last Metsian Podcast. So let's start with their trip out to Chicago. I went with them, actually, so that was kind of fun to go to Wrigley. And so the Mets went out there, and the reason I wanted to bring that up is – they won 3 out of 4 against a bad team, which sounds good. They were not able to sweep them. However, in that series, the Mets were unable to score a lot of runs against a bad Cubs pitching staff. So they scored enough to win 3 out of 4, but you could sort of see that just didn't feel right. You know, they played the Cubs really closely. A lot of the games were very close, 8-0 on the first game on the Thursday night. But then the next two that the Mets won were very close. They could have lost either of those games, and then they ended up losing on Sunday. So winning 3 out of 4, you know, you don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth, but when you do so in a way against a bad team where you're not scoring runs, it's a little bit concerning. So let's start with that, Mike. I know we're winding it back a little bit before the All-Star break, but going into that series or coming out of that series, going into the All-Star break, how do you take that? How do you take it when the team you're rooting for plays a clearly inferior team, and in this case, a team with very little pitching, They don't score a lot of runs, but they do win 3 out of 4. So what was your reaction to that?
You know, Rich, I've been going with my gut all season. And sometimes you win ugly. You know, sometimes it's not that pretty, but you still come out on top, and that's what happened at Chicago. And, you know, that's part and parcel to special seasons. And we have a particularly special summer going on. And, you know, in any season, any team, any era, winning ugly is part of the season. And that's the way I feel about it. And that's the way I came out of it. And that's the way I headed into the break. I feel good about what transpired in Chicago, no matter how it looked.
And I think that's fair. You know, and at the end of the year, it only matters on the left and right of the ledger, right? It doesn't matter if you beat the Cubs in a pretty fashion or an ugly fashion. What matters is whether or not you won those ball games. So, Ernest, let's go to you. Mets, you know, won the last 3 out of 4 before the break, not really in inspiring fashion. What were your thoughts after that series?
Well, and I know, yeah, all the talk is about the offense, so I get it. And I've been saying a lot of stuff on social media, even some of the main guys. Eduardo Escobar was slumping again. Mark Canna was – it looked insane when he came out the gate with the Mets. The guy was hitting 300 and walking all the time. We were like, he's an absolute godsend to this team. And then all of a sudden, he starts slowing down. And then there's even rumors of maybe too much analytics in his head. He was worried about his exit velocity. And now all of a sudden, even the small hits aren't even coming, but maybe he's trying too hard to hit the ball harder. So he's been slumping. And then there's the guys with the minor injuries here and there anyway. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I understand the offensive concerns. I understand everyone's talk about the catcher in the DH position because, obviously, by the way, Dom and JD are not winning the position all year. So that's probably obviously been part of the problem. But if the pitching is going to step up and if the right guys hit in runners in scoring position, just said it right now on the show, and even the booth says it all the time, it's kind of one of those things that happen in a quote-unquote magical season anyway. So I haven't really been worried about it other than when do the slumps turn around, when do guys play to the back of their baseball cards, and again, obviously, with health, how consistently can the pitchers keep them in the game and keep the runs within 2-3 a game for everybody?
And, you know, good point on the pitchers there. You know, the Mets, they set a record the other day, and think about all the great pitching staffs the Mets have had, you know, in late 60s, into the mid-70s. Again, in the 80s, I'm not sure if you guys saw this, but they set the record for most consecutive starts by the starting staff, most consecutive starts, with fewer than 2 earned runs allowed. I believe it was 13 games in a row or something like that. It's very close to that. And when you think about, again, the fact that the Mets organization has traditionally been built on pitching, you know, Seaver, Kuzman, Gentry days into, you know, Gooden, Darling, Fernandez, into current day, that they set that record. So the starting pitching has been fantastic. I'm glad you brought that up. But again, the offense had been sputtering. So let's fast forward. So the All-Star break comes and goes. And I, if you guys want to make a comment on that, you by all means, go ahead with the All-Star game. To me, a piece of my soul was missing. You know, when I was a kid, I used to love the All-Star game. Work to it. We really did, right? You know, most of my friends are Yankee fans, and we would all get together and watch it. It would be my chance and a couple of Mets fans I grew up with to really say, because the National League used to win all the time, and be like, you know, our Mets aren't that good, but the National League beat your American League. It was a big deal. And now it's a farce. I mean, it's like guys being mic'd up and all that. Anyway, I won't go off on that. You guys comment on that if you want. After the All-Star break, okay, Mets had their days off. They'll come out hitting, but did they? No, they did not. On Friday and Saturday, the Mets offense, they were stymied by good pitching. Absolutely. You know, you're stymied by Darvish and Snell. That's okay. No embarrassment there. But again, that made 6 games in a row where the Mets were just not scoring. But then, as typically is the case on Sunday Night Baseball against the Padres, the Mets broke out all at once. After they had that second and third no outs and didn't score in that game, you know, you're shaking your head thinking, oh, my God, what is this? But then they absolutely broke out and scored the 8 runs. So, okay, let's talk about the Padres series. They come out looking, hate to use word, but I'll use it, flat. First couple games, and games were winnable, and they did not win. And then they explode in the third game. So, Ernest, we'll start with you on that one. Coming out of – so they had the malaise that continued out of the All-Star break until Sunday night. We're setting the stage for what just happened in the Subway Series. What was your thought process having them – watching them play the Padres? Remember, they had looked really good against the Braves, won, but did not look good in the process against the Cubs. So what were your thoughts after losing 2 out of 3 to the Padres?
Well, yeah, the first one kind of looked like it is what it is against Darvish. I mean, sometimes with a pitcher like that, the Mets just seem to have a history of just going blank. The Snell one, I mean, I was kind of surprised they didn't just rough him up at least a little bit again. But again, we're still getting into the same situation, even going in and out of the break. The Mets lineup, maybe 1 through 4, 1 through 5-ish, we're worried about everything else. So it kept getting exposed again because I feel like quietly we haven't heard a lot from Nimmo for a little while. So that obviously hurts because if you don't have Nimmo getting on like 400 OBP and you don't have Canna getting on 400 OBP, everything else around the lineup just starts getting quiet. And unless you have Alonso hitting more homers like he started to do again, everything starts to get very quiet. If Escobar is striking out, if Lindor has an 0-for-4 and that freaks out the whole fan base, again, everything 1 through 4 or 5, if they're not even on it, and then 6 through 9 is basically kind of a black hole here and there, maybe getting 1 or 2 hits a game, it's been destroying the entire offense again. That's the situation I've been seeing.
Mike, your thoughts. Padres series coming off the Cubs series, where were you mentally at that point?
Well, you know, losing to you, Darvish, that's baseball. And I still maintain that point of view even in game 2. I'm trying to extract the positives. Chris Bassitt had a very good start, striking out 11 batters in 7 innings pitch. I'll take that, you know, and results be damned. He pitched a very good game, and I have to look around at other things. You know, they had 8 hits. They limited the Padres to 4 hits. That's just the way the ball bounces sometimes. I'm letting the weeks write the narrative. I'm not going to get caught up on one day. That's baseball. Baseball is a law of averages. Sometimes you have good days. Sometimes you have bad days. Sometimes you look great when you win. Sometimes you look ugly when you win, and vice versa. And this, to me, was another one of those games where, you know, I'll take 8 hits. I'll take 3 walks. They just couldn't bunch them together and get people across the plate. You know, Pete Alonso counted for 3 hits that day. So that leaves 5 for the rest of the lineup. Ernest brought up Eduardo Escobar, and you know, for Sam, who can't join us tonight, we talked earlier this afternoon, and despite his struggles this season, his hits and his run production are very timely. You know, it hasn't been consistent, but they've been clutch. And when we've needed help most, you know, there's been a bunch of times where he's shown up. So I look at the Padres as National League competition. You know, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. We're going to win some. They're going to win some. But just as long as I don't feel like we're being outplayed and we don't look like the Keystone Cops out there, I'm okay. I'm extracting Chris Bassett's start. Scherzer looked okay. You know, and of course, we won the series finale and got back to winning ways. So I'm okay. I'm not going to get overly dramatic. There's a large contingent in Metsville out there who are just dying for the other shoe to fall off. And Rich and Ernest, we both know that this time last year, the Mets were still in first place. And in mid-August, all that changed. And I think that still haunts a lot of Mets fans. And they're just waiting, you know, for Skylab to fall in Flushing. And I'm not feeling that way. Like I said, I'm extracting a lot of good out of these games, whether they win or lose. We're trending, and we're trending in a good direction, Rich. That's why I'm not getting overly anxious when things don't look well.
So, Mike, a couple comments on that. So we revived the Mayor's Trophy game earlier, and I'm reviving Skylab, which I think was in the late 70s. So, man, that's great. That's great stuff. And by the way, you have much more restraint than I, because you said that's baseball a few times. You didn't say Susan. So that's really good too. I would have gone for the that's baseball Susan. Anyway, no, I like your philosophy on that, you know, and Buck says what you said. Buck always says, yeah, you know, or he said it when they weren't driving runs in. He said, you know, you can look at this two ways. You could say we're not scoring and that's not good. And that's true. But at the same time, we're getting a lot of guys on base, which is half the equation. We just have to get the other half of the equation. So we're not totally failing. We're getting guys on, but we're just not getting them in. And when you hear that, it sounds a bit patronizing. But if you think about it, he's not wrong. You know, scoring runs, unless you're scoring with solo homers, really is a two-part formula. You have to get guys in, you have to drive them on. You have to get guys on and drive them in. And if you're in a situation where you have a lot of traffic on the bases, you're getting half of it done. You just have to do the other half, as opposed to getting one hit, you know, or having one or two base runners the entire night. It's a painful lesson for fans, but it's actually true.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing you touched on too was in those games, take the positive out. Like you said, Max Scherzer went six innings. I believe he gave up two runs. Bassett, well, that was one of the best starts. Definitely one of his best starts as a Met, other than the one in Atlanta, you know, where I think he had a career high, 11 strikeouts, tied a career high for 11 strikeouts in that game. So take the positives out and keep the wheels turning, right?
Right. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but the Mets clearly need help. We need help at certain positions and the lower portion of the lineup. That's obvious. And this all falls on Billy Eppler, you know, so we have to wait and see.
We do. And before we get there, let's talk about the Subway Series, because obviously, well, let's face it, the Subway Series has lost its luster over the years. Going into Tuesday night, I was annoyed. I'm like, you know, I don't need this nonsense. I want to play the Braves. I'm worried about that. I don't give a crap about these games. It's just two more games. But, you know, the energy at Citi Field with both teams being in first place, and it was just different this year. It was like a light switch was flipped. You know, what had become kind of a malaise over the Subway Series was replaced by a playoff-like atmosphere. And let's talk about what happened. You know, in the first game, our fears as Met fans manifest. You know, Yankees hit two moonshots in the first inning. I'm getting texts from everybody I know who are Met fans. They're going to get killed. This is going to be a bloodbath. And I'm like, stop texting me. I'm ready. You know, my brother's like, I'm turning it off. And I'm like, but okay. But the Mets, they come right back. They didn't even wait. They came right back in the bottom of the first, took the lead, held on. Diaz, four outs, great. Last night was just a classic baseball game. I want to talk about all this stuff. The one thing I will throw out is the win was a bit diminished for me because Scherzer didn't get the win on his birthday and after he pitched so well. I was a little bit annoyed by that, but let's face it, those were two wonderful baseball games in front of a packed house. It was really good. So, Ernest, I'll start with you. This Mets team, and I'm getting a sense, tell me what you think of this, that this may be a Mets team, or like a lot of sports teams, where you use the phrase, bend, don't break. The Mets have bent a lot. We've seen the lead go down to a half game. We've seen it, you know, start 10.5, go down to a half. And the Mets have built it back. When they were going into Atlanta, I was like, oh, my God, this is the end. You know, the Braves are going to sweep them. They're going to end up in first place. Didn't happen. Mets showed up and won. After not hitting essentially against the Cubs and Padres, Mets go down early to the Yankees. They bent, but they didn't break. They came right back. So, Ernest, give me your general thoughts on the Subway Series. Were you into it? Did it mean more to you than it has in the past? How are you taking it?
I mean, honestly, too, even before it started, it was kind of like, listen, you know, I'll watch. I'm going to enjoy it. It's entertaining. It still means absolutely nothing at the end of the day as far as the season and reaching the playoffs. But then the games were going on, and, yeah, you could obviously see it. It just – it was literally the World Series shown on television. Even ESPN, of course, does their thing to make everything times 100,000 decibels sound-wise, which even makes it more kind of a lot. So, obviously, it brings a lot to the atmosphere. And the Mets, obviously, they're stepping up. But they've been stepping up all year. Everyone waited for the June collapse, which, by the way, they finished June above 500, even playing 10 games on the road on the West Coast. And then they've been winning all of July. So a lot of the fan stuff was what? All we talked about was the Astros. They got beat by the Astros. That's it. Season's over. And then here they are, winning after winning after winning. And even these two games, it shows exactly what's going on. Like you said, bend, but they don't break. They have that mixture this year where the whole magical term comes in once again. They go down a little bit, oh, but then they come right back. Like even, you know, Gary and Keith have been saying all season, they give up a couple of runs, they score a couple right off the bat. So it's been happening the whole time. And then when you need it, the pitching shuts it down the whole way through. So it's been going on. This is nothing new the entire year. It's just the fan base waiting for the collapse, like everyone's, like you're saying right now. But all in all, you have to enjoy the series. I don't want to just say enjoy it because the Mets won, but all in all, it was a good series. Two teams played hard. There were some errors and miscues here and there, but in the big moments, like Max, you know, getting rid of Judge every at-bat, I mean, there was some serious stuff going on that made all of it exciting from play to play for every at-bat for the entire nine innings of both games.
Well said. That is exactly right. And, Mike, I'll go to you, and I was just thinking about this. Could we say that the Subway Series kind of was the Mets' season? They bent, you know, the Yankees scored early, but they didn't break. They came back. Game two. Their guy's on the mound. Their guy is dominating Judge. Everything sounds great. And then, boom, in seconds, that game is tied when Peterson comes on. But what do the Mets do? They bent there. They didn't break. They came back and won the game. What are your thoughts on that? You might be muted, Mike.
Sorry about that. There's a lot of character in that clubhouse. A lot of strong-minded individuals in that dugout who just continually push forward. Scherzer, first and foremost, when he's not on the mound, he's in that dugout, and he's talking to people, and he's pushing them. Make no mistake. He even said so a couple of weeks ago, not too long ago, on SNY, and he's like, you know, sometimes you've got to overcome, you've got to push forward, and it's no time for complacency. These are my words, not necessarily what he said, but these are sentiments he was trying to put forth. And that's what I see, a lot of strong-minded individuals who aren't going to let themselves get down. And again, going back, because Sam, you know, really wanted to make this point about Eduardo Escobar. Look at the game. Look at the Yankees, the Mets 6-3 victory in game one. Escobar, that was a big home run in the first inning. Again, stats say he's struggling, but he comes up in those important moments. And that's what everyone's doing. If you look at that game, you know, Alonso, Lindor, they continually come through for this team. They accounted for half of the Mets' 10 hits. And then you throw Marte, whose home run, you know, ignited it, everything. That was a lot of fun. And I'm with you, Rich. I hate interleague. I want no part of it. I want it done. But I allowed myself to be entertained by these games. I enjoyed the competition. You know, as we know, the Yankees are one of the top teams in all of baseball with their record. They're fighting it out with the Dodgers for most wins. So I welcome the competition to Citi Field. And I'm very pleased with the results. You know, the Mets stood up to that. Vinny Vidi Vici, you know, in their home park. So I'm cool. And, again, extraction. You look at Tawan Walker, and I know wins and losses have been watered down. But he's 8-2 now, and he's deserved all 8 victories. Yeah, he gave up those 2 home runs right off the bat, but he regrouped and he stayed the course and wound up pitching 6 very good innings. And that's what he's been doing all year, as we've alluded to many times already in the show, that the pitching has been holding this team together. And it's a matter of timely hitting. We need more bats. They made a transaction for Vogelbach, but obviously that's not the answer. We need more. But Alonso, you look at those RBI totals, he just improved that. Lindor, you know, you look at last season, you look at what he's doing this season, and he's pushing this team forward. And he's another leader in this clubhouse. And that's what the Mets have, a bunch of leaders, and the ultimate leader in Buck Showalter. A lot of this success I attribute to Buck Showalter and the frame of mind that he keeps this active roster applied to.
You know, Mike, you just took thank you for that, and you just took exactly what I was going to ask. That was going to be my next question. So since you've already spoken to it, I'll bring it to Ernest. So, Ernest, you know, what I'm feeling here, and I think a lot of people are, is we all, you know, I think we all alluded to, I think, Mike, you did specifically, that when the Mets start losing, it's like, oh, my God, it's 2021 all over again. The calendar's about to be August. That's when they collapse, blah, 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 blah. It's going to be a repeat. Well, now I'm starting to feel like it's not going to be. And now I'm going to ask you the question, Ernest, is why? Is it not going to be a repeat? With all likelihood and certainly hoping it's not. Because of what do you think? Is it the personnel? Is it the different players? Or are you attributing some, if not a lot of this, to Buck and leadership? And I'll throw in, maybe bringing in a Max Scherzer who is leader. So is it the actual talent on the field why maybe we're not feeling like a collapse is coming? Or is it more the intangible leadership, and where do you see that leadership coming from?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously the leadership from Buck has been shown from day one, and they've been talking about it all season. Like, they talk about, you know, Buck being such a hard worker, more than just being the senior guy who knows a lot. I mean, he's also doing a lot of things. The information, they talk about how he seems to know everything at every moment. He has a plan for everything. He's okay, and yeah, he's perfectly fine and happy utilizing analytics. So part of that leadership, and even again, he's that guy in all the interviews and post games and pre games. He'll tell some jokes. He'll do this. He'll even support his players, downplay certain things. The leadership is definitely there. It's always going to also, obviously, it'll be about the players a whole bunch. But that's what also I've been trying to say, you know, all year, is enough with the collapse stuff. We can't really compare players. The Mets have had some pretty good teams in the past that have collapsed. But you know what? The part of the thing with this year, with them being 20 games over 500 and people thinking they're about to lose, by the way, where's DeGrom? So it's one of those things where guys were getting hurt early while there were 20 games above 500 this year. And even in some of the recent years that everyone's pointing to, well, remember when they faded in this year? And then you'll go back into it, and they were like, the Mets were about 8 games above 500 before they quote-unquote faded. This year they're like 25 games over 500 or so. Like, it's a totally different team. And, again, you have guys that aren't even back yet. Say what you want about May, but he's still a veteran guy. He's on the way back. DeGrom hasn't even pitched. Certain guys with smaller injuries, even McNeils and guys have been missing small amounts of time, and they're coming back. People seem to be just forgetting about this stuff going on. This isn't one of those Mets teams a few years ago where it's like, well, they were shining in April and May, and then, like, what was it, the year ago, like 60 players they had to run through in the season because of injuries. And then you had Walker basically fading away. McGill was fading away because of just basically having to pitch too much. So I just think everyone was overthinking way too much. And even with Walker, nobody wants to trust Walker, who, by the way, spent almost 3 years not pitching. So I wonder why he faded last year. Everything about this year is different, from the players to having Max yell at everyone probably. He's not going to let things fade. A lot of guys have some carefree attitudes. You have the leadership at the top through the manager. You also have an owner that's just going to buy everything if you need it. So I mean, there's so many things colliding right now at this point. So why is everyone waiting for a collapse when it's a different team? These teams didn't have Marte on it, which, by the way, he's been an absolute star again for a while, if not the entire season. No, there's not even enough people talking about Marte, by the way, and that four-year contract looks like a gift. There's just a different team and a different mindset, and again, they've been missing guys from the beginning. So they're actually getting guys. Rather than that joke, well, we're getting a guy, it's like getting a guy at the deadline, but they've been missing guys during a first-place run. So you would have to think it can continue to get better because of the leadership, because of the guys returning, and because of different caliber players, veterans, a lot of guys in their 30s. They have more lead. Even bringing in, like, Vogelbach, apparently, is another playful, joyful guy who's a great clubhouse guy. I mean, everyone they have, it's just a whole different mindset to it, along with the few mega contract guys who want to win.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the formula is so much different. It starts at the top, and, you know, different leadership, veteran who's been through basically everything. You know, it's not his first rodeo. You have that. You have Max Scherzer. You have a different element, different chemistry on this team, all of which points to, look, they may fall out of first place. Who knows? You know, it may be a dogfight all the way down to the end. Who knows what's going to happen? But I don't see the team collapsing like last year, which was nothing short of an epic collapse last year. So moving past that, we are at our halfway point reset on the show. And this is Rich Sparago, and you are listening to the Metsian podcast with Sam, Rich, and Mike, and our special guest tonight, Mr. Ernest Dove, who does a lot in the baseball world and is certainly an expert in the minor leagues, and we're going to get into that in the second half of the show. But Ernest, before we do that, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how the Mets found you or how you found them. What has your Metsian journey been like?
Oh, it's been an interesting journey for me. Even starting to write, even blogging for even Max Mets back in the day where, I mean, it's not really funny, but quote-unquote, I was technically semi-homeless when I even applied to start being a writer and a blogger on Max Mets back in, like, 2013. So it's been an interesting journey from being kind of semi-homeless, living on a relative in an extra bedroom they had, moving on to even the Mets Marais and Mets Minors site, getting to obviously moving into Florida again, becoming the king of South Florida, going to all the minor league games for the St. Lucie Mets when they were first high A and now low A, to the point of getting media credentials for the last few years in a row to be part of the media, to be able to go to the games, go to the press box. So that's been an interesting journey to the point of now being part of even the sports report, going to a radio station on Sportswire Radio for sportnarium.com/player. So now it's also all at this point, currently I'm doing a lot of player interviews. So over the years it's been fun covering the Mets, blogging about the Mets, talking about the Mets, to the point of now interviewing the Mets. It's been a really fun ride for me. And again, someone like myself, you know, having Steven Ogosek on the show talking about his minor league grind, and then a year or two later he's pitching in the major leagues. It's an amazing thing to experience, even on my small end, being able to know that, hey, I was talking to that guy when he was just sitting there in AA, AAA, on the grind trying to figure out where his life's heading, and there he is in the majors. It's really a fun experience. So that's why I'm continuing the Mets journey as it is now, looking forward to ongoing interviews and talk shows and talking to more of the players, coaches. It's been a fun ride. I'm actually hoping for a few other good things to come on the way, even through the Mets organization, some future interviews hopefully to be able to kind of showcase later.
Perfect. Thank you for that. All right, gentlemen, so we are now in the second half of our show, and we do need to talk about the trade deadline. So let me start with this. You know, here we are on essentially July 29th in an hour and 2.5 hours. And it's nice to be a couple of days, in this case, August 2nd, I believe it's at 4 p.m., trade deadline. It's nice to be a couple of days away and be buyers and not sellers, so let's all be thankful for that. And now let's get into some of the rumors that are out there. Well, so let's go to the one that is probably, at least from what the tea leaves that I'm reading, probably the hottest one. which is centering around Wilson Contreras and David Robertson of the Cubs. Wilson Contreras, the catcher, and David Robertson, the reliever. So if you look at this, Contreras, Mets need a bat. And we talked about how they don't get a lot of production from the bottom of their order, which is where their catcher's bat. So Contreras is a catcher. He can also DH. It seems like a perfect fit. You know, you're adding offense in spots where you're getting virtually nothing at this point. So this year, Contreras is slashing 258, 373, 474, and 843 OPS, which is really, really good. 14 home runs. Wilson Contreras. Now, if the Mets were to go after him, and David Robertson is just a perfect fit for the Mets. I mean, it just can't be any better. You know, here you have a guy who's pitching to a 183 ERA, and yes, I know that ERA is not really a stat people look at anymore, particularly for relievers. I think the most important stat for relievers is whip, because when you come in, you don't want to have traffic on the bases. David Robertson has a whip of .992, which is very, very good. So, yes, Robertson is getting up there in age. He's 37. He has New York experience pitching in big moments. Wilson Contreras will be a free agent at the end of the year. So let's start to talk about that, Ernest. My first question to you is, do you like the fit of Robertson and Contreras for the Mets? And the obvious second question is, what would you be willing to give up? And here's where I'm going with it. Are Beatty and Alvarez off the table? Would you trade one of them in a deal for Contreras and Robertson? Remember, you're getting a guy who has a couple of months left on his contract and a guy who's 37. Would you consider trading Alvarez if you thought to yourself, well, we could just keep Contreras? I mean, Contreras is 30. We can have him for a few more years. Where are you with all that? Where are you with that trade in particular?
Well, I mean, with those names, that's when the prospect hugger screams and comes out of me. So, and I know the Mets, obviously I've been talking about it a lot recently. Hopefully they learn their lesson. At least behind the scenes, staring at the highlight videos of Pete Carl Armstrong this year. So when it comes to, first and foremost, actually that combo that's been rumored way too much, usually when the rumor goes for that long, it should have already happened by now, the trade, by the way. Maybe I should check Twitter right now to make sure it didn't happen as we're talking, because it seems like way too long to be having this match, which is, honestly, it's a perfect fit for both. So the reliever is perfect. And like you said, the ERA, yada, yada, I think FIP, oh, my God, we're going to talk about FIP. I mean, it's up and down here and there. But at the end of the day, for a reliever, and again, Robertson would be a guy who can pitch, what, seventh and eighth inning? So we don't have to ask him to be the closer, because the Mets basically have the number one closer in baseball. So he's an absolute perfect fit. Even if they were worried about money, he's costing them absolutely nothing, because he has a small contract for this final year anyway. And then obviously Contreras would fit mostly the DH role. I don't even know what his role would be ever catching. The guys, and you want to have the right catchers. You see what's going on all year with Bassett and maybe sometimes with Scherzer. You want to give them the guy that they know so they know what they're doing. As far as who to give up, I don't think they want to go that route anymore and give up like a top five prospect for any more rentals. Maybe they learned their lesson on that. So as far as, like, I mean, where do you go? We just had the trade of Benintendi, and it looks like basically the Yankees are giving up a couple of top 20-ish prospects in their farm, and a guy who I'm not even sure is ranked in their top 30, probably another lottery ticket. So when you're giving up something like that, three guys outside your top 15, I don't want to compare farm systems between the Mets and Yankees. So to get two rentals combined, do you even have to give up a top 10 guy? I don't know if maybe you have to when you combine the two, but you'd have to go a little bit lower on that. I'm not even sure if a Mauricio or Vientos by themselves might be considered too much for both of the rentals. Maybe that would be the one to explore if you literally just gave one of them and maybe a non-30 guy because of Contreras, because he's having such a monster season stats-wise. I wouldn't go any higher than that, but again, that would literally be even just one for the two. I don't even know who else you would even give up in that trade, especially with they just got burned by the same Cubs. But Beatty and Alvarez, and for me, Alex Ramirez, I think those are three guys you're not trading unless you have years of control from somebody you're getting back.
So, you know, And obviously it depends. Obviously the Cubs are probably shopping these guys, and what are other teams offering? You know, that will come down to it. I think the fit is almost too good to be true. With how aggressively the Mets are pursuing, Contreras, you wonder what the word on McCann is. McCann has kind of fallen off the face of the earth. You haven't heard a word about him since July 9th. Oh, you know, he strained his oblique, and it's going to be more than a 10-day IL stint. Okay. That was 3 weeks ago. What is he doing now? Is he getting any better? With Scherzer, you heard about everything. So maybe what I'm thinking is the McCann, you know, McCann might be an eight-week thing, which brings us to September, and the Mets are feeling like, you know, they can't go on with Nito and Mazzucca or Nito and Michael Perez. I mean, come on. If you're a contending team, you can't go with those catchers. You need better, especially when you're not getting anything from DH. So, Mike, the fit seems good. It will come down to the price tag, right?
Yes, indeed. I'd love to have Robertson and Contreras on the team. They could definitely help. But it's all about the price tag, and I have to agree with Ernest. I would not include Francisco Alvarez or Brett Beatty in a trade for either one of those two individuals. No way. There has to be other people involved. See, the thing with Alvarez, he can help the Mets. Maybe not this year. I'm against bringing him up this year. But he's someone who can help the Mets. The Mets have a situation at third base. Brett Beatty can step in and help the Mets. Those are two players who can help the parent club. Other prospects, perhaps not so much. We know Ronnie Mauricio's problem. His problem is Francisco Lindor. Mark Vientos, his body kind of played out of third base. He's spending most of his time at first base now. And, you know, we got Pete Alonso. So perhaps those two guys, along with others, are who Billy Epler potentially can work with. You know, Khalil Lee, we like to throw his name around because he's touched the big leagues. We've seen him. Perhaps he can be involved. The Yankees made this trade for Benintendi. And as Ernest said, you know, they gave up a bunch of low-level pitching prospects. That's kind of the same situation the Mets are in. We don't have, you know, highly touted pitching prospects in AAA or AA, but down in Brooklyn and St. Lucie, perhaps we do, you know, and the first one that comes to mind is Nick Zwack. He's having a stellar season here in Brooklyn. He was promoted from St. Lucie. And there's been a lot of players actually this season who've been promoted from St. Lucie to Brooklyn and from Brooklyn to AA. Jose Budo, he's another pitcher. Grant Hartwig, he's another pitcher. Eric Orris, he's another pitcher. Today for Brooklyn, Carson Seymour pitched. He struck out 9 in 7 innings. You know, so the pitching depth for the Mets is in the lower portions of the farm. So, you know, Billy Epler is going to have to get creative. Some of these names are going to have to go, even names that we haven't mentioned. But, Rich, in no way am I including Alvarez. The only way I include Alvarez or Beatty is if we're bringing in Soto. And I think we can all agree that's not happening. The Nationals aren't going to trade him to us. So, again, Alvarez has value to the Mets. Beatty has value to the Mets. Some of these other prospects, you know, that's why you groom these players. Some you keep, some you trade. And Vientos, as remarkably as he's playing and showing off his talents, he has a problem, and it's called Pete Alonso. So let's see what Billy Epler can conjure up come or by Tuesday.
So, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on this one trade, but I am kind of interested in your perspective. What if, Ernest, what if the Mets got a little creative with the Cubs and said, okay, well, we'd like to have Ian Happ, too. We'd like to do one-stop shopping. You know, Happ could be another bat. Contreras is a bat. And we want Robertson for obvious reasons. All of them fit nicely on the Mets roster. What if the price tag became, maybe the price tag is Mauricio, maybe it's Mauricio, one of the lower-level minor league pitchers that Mike mentioned, What if they also want a David Peterson, like a young, controllable arm? God only knows the Cubs need arms. Would you do that?
Well, that's where it starts getting interesting when you start trying to add and mix and match the guys like that. Peterson, you want to talk about the value of a guy who you can put in your rotation regardless right now. So, and if you package him and a prospect like Mauricio, because here's the thing, rather than also just do the name by name with Lindor and everything else, the other thing obviously with Mauricio is he's only been playing shortstop the entire season. Why? There's no point of that. Even if you have him on second base, it must have been a year or two ago, at least in like camp, they were at least experimenting with him a little bit, like try the outfield. All of a sudden, the season comes, all through the first half of the season, Mauricio hasn't seen a lick of anything other than shortstop. And sometimes it gets to a point of maybe semi-conspiracy theories, like why? Why is he only staying at shortstop for a guy who is not really getting on base? The OBP is low. He's not walking. I believe he walked today. We should have an alert for that. He hit another home run tonight. The guy's on pace for basically almost a 30-homer season. So when you have like a 30-homer bat from the shortstop position, that's probably why they're trying to give him the highest value they can. Like, hey, look what we have. We have a guy who plays shortstop who can hit 30 home runs. That's pretty huge. And as for Vientos, by the way, it seems like he's playing one heck of a lot of first base lately. He's not even playing third base anymore. And the last I checked, Brett Beatty is still in Double A. So nobody has pushed him off third other than, again, I think they're trying to put him in the best spot available. Vientos is really hot right now with the bat, and they're getting him at first rather than putting him at third because of some concerns from day one from being in the organization playing third. So you kind of feel like the Mets have been setting this up from last year and especially all season right now to, through the deadline. There might be a reason why these two guys are specifically where they are, even at level and even at position. So would I package one of them and Peterson? My answer would be yes, because, again, you can never have enough pitching. But for an all-in Mets team right now, they could probably find replacements for Peterson in the future. And even we have to worry about the health of McGill, but let's just knock on wood and say whatever happens this year, McGill's ready to rock to end the year and then next year. If you have a McGill who's healthy and can get back in the rotation, that says a lot. And I'm also a big Jose Buto fan. And, again, now I could start creating my conspiracy theories again on Buto because why is he still in Double A? The numbers have been up and down. His K rate has been high the whole season. The ERA's fluctuated up and down, but he eats innings, and he's had good outings and good quality starts, quote-unquote. Are guys like this being basically groomed to be traded? I think there's room to trade those guys. Now, again, if you want to package up to like three guys, it's getting really fascinating at that point. You can't just package up a bunch of top 30-ish guys. It's going to look ridiculous. So, yeah, at that point, if you add two and a third major leaguer, even on rentals, you're going to start popping in a high-end guy. So the question is, does everyone see Vientos and Mauricio still as high-end guys? There's been some talk of people trying to bump Mauricio off their top 100 national lists. So I don't know the feelings anymore, at least on him.
Mike, how about the thought of giving up one of the better prospects in Mauricio, you know, one or two of the arms, maybe one of the arms that you talked about, and a David Peterson to get an Ian Happ, a Contreras, and a Robertson? I mean, the three of those guys are – it's almost like a hand in glove. So what would you do it? Remember, all these guys are on short stays.
Yeah, Rich, I'm copacetic with that. You know, for as long as we're not including Alvarez and Beatty, I won't break out in a rash. That sounds reasonable to me. I'd be welcome to that. If we look back, you know, think back to the trade to acquire Gary Carter, Frank Viola, Mike Piazza. We traded away a lot of prospects in those deals. And luckily, none of them came back to haunt us. So, you know, there's precedence in dealing with large packages to bring in, you know, needed talent. So I will say, don't be hesitant. Do it with confidence. I like that package. You have to give in order to get. I'm not too excited about trading Peterson, but if we have to, we have to. I think we can make up for his absence.
All right, so now let's pivot to something else. Well, let's have a little fun, guys. Shohei Ohtani. The mere mention of his name, and everybody's like, oh, my God, you know, freak of nature, great player. Billy Epler obviously knows him from the Angels. Angels are, from what I heard, listening on Ohtani, not necessarily saying they'll trade him. They're listening. So they also have a couple other guys, Stassi, who might fit the Mets. Let me pivot to you, Ernest. Shohei Ohtani, generational talent, all these things. You include Alvarez there. You include Alvarez and Beatty there to bring back this guy. Or do you say, and maybe a Stassi, somebody else who could be a, you know, role player. Or do you say to yourself, nope, Alvarez is our guy. Let's not do this. You know, he's only, what is he, 20? He could be 15 years from now, a great player still. Who knows about Ohtani? Hold the prospects. Where are you with it? Let's go big time.
Well, I mean, still technically, until proven otherwise, I mean, Ohtani guy has, what, 1 year left after this? So you still would have to re-sign the guy, number one. So that would be a factor. And it also becomes one of those, he has the year, but again, even those Lindor factors where you take on the guy and you end up keeping him anyway, where for Lindor, and they threw in, but they got obviously Cookie for that too. And you gave up a major league infielder, say what you want about Rosario. Then you gave up Jimenez, and there was also two high-end prospects who, even the last I checked, hasn't been going well for those prospects. So that's why it is you give and you get, and prospects you never know, and that's another reason for it. We're sitting here with Lindor and even Carrasco and then the Indians, but again, they have an all-star in Jimenez. Rosario's kind of doing okay. He never probably met that potential we were like skyrocketing for. But for a guy like Ohtani, even if you have to factor in he's only a one-year extra guy, yeah, now you're throwing in Alvarez and Beatty, and you're going to have to kind of give up the farm. It kind of is what it is, especially when you're going to have him hit for it. He would be the best DH, and he would be the best, you know, pitcher behind Max right now active. I mean, that would be incredible to have a guy like that and to market a guy like that. You can't always want to think doom and gloom for a guy who's, what, 28? Get him long-term for a guy who's doing both. You're probably already worried just for the sake of being worried. But, yeah, Ohtani, Soto, those are the guys where even me, I've been honest, and I'm like, listen, if you have to give up Alvarez, Beatty, and maybe Ziegler, those are the people you're giving up because it is what it is to get Soto. And it's probably the same for Ohtani, as long as you could be like, well, we're going to be able to sign him back if we want. You're giving up the top-end guys, and it is what it is, and you just sit here and you worry about it in 5 years. Is a Kalenic situation going to happen, or is the guy going to be an absolute star somewhere? That's the gamble you take for Ohtani no matter what. So, yeah, I'm giving up the top guys for Ohtani.
Interesting to hear you say that because of the one-year thing. You know, you never know what will happen after that and what egg you'd have on your face if you gave up, you know, your essentially your best prospects for a guy that you only have for a year. Now, granted, you could win a World Series in that year. So, Mike, let me turn to you. You know, do you remember when Steve Phillips wanted to get Barry Larkin? And one of the things that Larkin had a no trade, was willing to waive it if the Mets extended his contract. And so you don't see a lot of that in baseball, you know, a sign and trade kind of a thing, or a trade and sign. But I wonder, would you give up the farm, as Ernest said, you know, let's say Mauricio and Beatty, and there, it's going to be more than that. You might have to throw in a Peterson. You might have to throw in a goodness knows who. But what if you were able to work something out with the Angels where you had a 72-hour window or 48, we don't even have 72 hours, right? A little more than that for a trade deadline. You had a window to see if you could extend Ohtani. And if you could, would you make a deal for a guy who, let's face it, he's otherworldly, but he's 28, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the future. Would you give up your best two prospects and probably more to bring that guy in if you were able to extend it?
I don't know. I'm kind of torn. He strikes me more as a novelty, Rich. I'd have to be assured, are we going to play Ohtani ball or is he going to play Mets ball? This dichotomy between pitcher and position player, you know, what kind of rules are the Mets going to have to adhere to? Is it going to be that kind of situation? I'd rather not go there, to be honest with you. I'd rather see two players graduate to the big leagues and be successful, meaning Alvarez and Beatty. I'd rather see promotion from within and have them become homegrown stars than trading them away. These two players, than trading them away to save the Angels and seeing them flourish somewhere else. Ohtani's great. I don't deny him that. I don't begrudge him one bit for his duality. I just want no part of it. That's a little bit of old school thinking on my part. I like players to know their roles, come to the ballpark and perform. I don't want to have to split my mindset between Ohtani the pitcher and Ohtani the position player. I don't want to go there. Not at the expense of Alvarez and Beatty. Because these two players can fit very nicely into two positions of need on the Mets. And if we bring in Ohtani, we're still in the same boat where third base and catcher are two positions that are just being underserviced, put it that way.
You know, I'm taken aback by thought of having Ohtani, but there's something about it that I just would not give up the top. I would not give up Alvarez and Beatty. Maybe one, but not both. I don't know. There's something about it where he might come on the Mets and you know, he might be the missing piece to winning a World Series. Like Ernest said, he would be your number two starter, maybe number three behind DeGrom if DeGrom's okay. Imagine going into a series and you have to face those three guys out of the gate. And he also, you know, could obviously provide the offense, and it could be the difference between winning a World Series and not. But the thought of something potentially going wrong with him, and then you watch your two former top prospects flourish somewhere else for 15 years, I don't know why I think that way, but I just do. But it's interesting. We have some different opinions on that, and that's what makes the show, that's what makes Talking Baseball great. So let's pivot to something that might be a bit more realistic. Because I think Ohtani, everybody wants Ohtani. And the Cubs, everybody wants, or a lot of teams want Contreras and Roberts, and maybe the Mets get them, maybe they don't. Something that might make a little more practical sense, let's talk about that. Just watch the Red Sox. They just won like 5 minutes ago, but they're struggling. They really are. They look like a bad baseball team right now. They started terribly. They had a surge. Now they're really in a tailspin. And one of the guys whose name is out there is JD Martinez. That guy can mash, let's face it. The guy can mash. Mets need a guy who can mash. I've heard, I don't know where it stands right now, I've heard that Sox have always liked Dom Smith. So if something can be put together where it's Dom Smith and J.D. Martinez, there might be, you know, a peripheral player here or there, minor leaguer here or there going either way. Martinez would be clearly be a rental. Dom might be somebody that the Red Sox see as somebody they could, you know, grow around a little bit. Maybe he has a good swing for Fenway when he's going to left field. He can, you know, clang a few off the wall. Let's talk about that. So, first of all, of course, the Red Sox have to tell themselves we're out of it and we are going to sell. And who knows if they'll do that. But let's take a look at numbers. J.D. Martinez is slashing 295, 363, 471, OPS 833, which is very enticing. He has 9 home runs from the right side. If you got a J.D. Martinez and a reliever or two, I don't know, Ernest, I would call that a successful trading deadline because you got the big man. We, you know, Vogelbach, his sister name is the big man. You got the big man from the left side. J.D. Martinez could be a bat from the right side to your DH position. Now at least you have competence. And then if you got a Robertson, maybe you can't work out Contreras. If you got a two solid relievers, two questions. Would that be a decent trade deadline for you? And do you think J.D. Martinez is a realistic target for the Mets?
Well, I also think he would be a good fit. Because, I mean, I understand. This has been going on ever since Cohen bought the team. It's now you literally want everyone, like literally everyone. During the offseason, the fans wanted whatever the top 10 listed free agents are. I think the Mets fans wanted all 10. And even at the deadline, everyone wants Soto. Give up the entire team. Nobody cares. Cohen will buy all the replacements. We still have to slow down at some point. And so my thing is, yeah, if you can get that right-handed bat, whether it's Mancini, Martinez, Contreras, and then you get a Robertson, I would still like a lefty. I mean, God, come on. I keep hearing the theories that are not totally where you 100% need a lefty, but my goodness, it would be nice to literally have one. In the game of baseball with Universal DH, everyone has like five lefties in the pen, and the Mets are sitting here with like Joely, and I think it might be time to get another lefty. So if the Mets were able to get a bat like this and a lefty, and maybe even Robertson, I don't really know what to think of May. I want to believe in May. I want to believe in Lugo. I want to believe Lugo is fixed. He is back to normal. I've been thinking about this each time he pitches well, and then it doesn't work out the next outing. If you can get – I know everyone wants like three pen arms, but we need to slow down. So if we can get another righty bat, which, again, everyone's complaining about that, though. What's the point of another righty bat? When is Vogelbach going to play? You know what? Figure it out. Especially with expanded rosters of a little bit in September, you might as well do that, because if you start a guy like a Vogelbach, but then either way, teams are going to go to their bullpen quickly, so you're going to have to probably need another lefty later, or if you start a righty, then he comes out for Vogelbach, and then they bring in another guy, a lefty, now you need a righty. There's a reasoning why you can get another righty. So I just think a big righty bat, I would like a lefty. And then if it was Robertson, the three of that would be icing on my cake, because, again, you can't always name the biggest guys out there and just want the Mets to get them just because. So I think for legitimate, realistic purposes, a lefty, a Robertson, and a righty bat, and I think bring back the Grom and let's pray he's healthy and win a World Series.
I'm with you. I mean, I never liked the idea of getting Soto. I love Soto as a player. Don't get me wrong. But emptying the farm system for him, he's one guy. He can get hurt. What if he tears an Achilles and he misses the season, and you have nothing?
Yeah.
I mean, the price is not worth it. And I'm not giving him $40 million a year either, by the way. And yes, I know it's not my money, but I don't think the Mets should give him $40 million a year. So I agree with you on that. I think you have to have realistic expectations. And a J.D. Martinez, a Robertson and a lefty reliever, that's a damn good haul at the deadline. That's addressing needs. That's just not chasing the shiny toy. That's addressing identified needs. All these things are realistic. About Trevor May, yeah, I mean, I think he'll be okay. He says he's throwing pain-free. But the thing is, you need – even if a good Trevor May is great, you need more than that. And my brother texted me last night, well, you know, why the hell aren't they using Ottavino and Diaz? And I'm like, well, because both those guys pitched a lot on Tuesday night. And he said, well, that's the problem with those guys. They're not durable. No, that's not it. The problem isn't that. The problem is the Mets don't have the depth. Like because as when we're in crunch time, as fans, we're like, well, give me Ottavino and Diaz because we don't trust everybody else. What the Mets need is not to push Ottavino and Diaz. They need more depth in the bullpen. So if you get a Robertson – anime, now you have guys that you could use night after night, and you can rotate them night after night, more reliable arms. That's what the Mets really need. And so maybe it's time to take our focus away from the shiny new toys and then what everybody else wants, you know, kicking and screaming, I want it now, Daddy, and talk about what you really need and what you realistically could get to get you over the top, because that's really what's going to matter. So, Mike, where are you on this? Would you say that a deadline where you're bringing in a lefty reliever, a righty reliever, and a righty bat, for argument's sake, let's say Martinez, is that a good deadline for you?
That would be ideal, Rich. That would be that would suit me very well. You know, catcher, for as long as they're doing a good job of being a receiver, that bat could be somewhere else. And, you know, Martinez fits the bill. That would be a perfect trade deadline scenario, Rich. It really would. We need the bullpen help, and we need the bat help. That would be ideal.
So, guys, I have some breaking news. The Mets have acquired Tyler Naquin from the Reds, the outfielder, and Philip Deal, also from the Reds. I don't know who Philip Deal is. I'd have to look that up if you guys want to do that. But this just came across the past minute. Tyler Naquin, former Indian or Guardian, well, Indian at the time, and Philip Deal, D-I-E-H-L, like the Giants' former offensive lineman, David Deal. Mets just got those guys. Don't know who's going back. It's hot off the press.
Well,
anyway,
you know what? The only thing I can really say is I'm very interested to see how Billy Upler handles this. I'm not going to judge him on Vogelback. I think that's very interesting. I'm sure Dom Smith finds that very interesting. This one, I'm very interested, Rich, to see how he handles this trade deadline.
So, well, he just picked up a guy in Naquin who is batting, slashing 245, 305, 429, 734 OPS, which is not bad. Six home runs. He is a lefty bat, outfielder lefty bat. So, okay. Let's see where this goes. They just got the big man, so they're adding another lefty bat. And let's see what they do next. Deal, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look him up. I'm looking at the Reds roster right now. I'm trying to find out if he's – I'm not even sure if he's in the major leagues. I usually know these guys, but his name is not ringing a bell for me. Anyway, so – but I think – right. So think about what the Mets just did. They just picked up a lefty bat. He's not a superstar by any stretch of the imagination, but a solid player, a solid lefty bat. It does seem like Billy Epler takes that approach. Like, look at who we acquired. You know, Marte's a solid player, but more of that kind of a guy, a solid guy. Canna, solid guy. Escobar, Mets had every reason to believe he was a solid player, and he may well be. But it does seem like this is another plank in the Billy Epler approach. And I think what this tells us is we could forget about Soto, we could probably forget about Ohtani and those kinds of guys, and Epler's going to get these guys who are obtainable without breaking the bank, but fit the puzzle. So, Ernest, what do you think of that?
Well, now I'm even busy looking at all this right now. They're trying to grab a bunch of lefties. They got a lefty pitcher and a lefty hitter. It just looks like depth to me, so we could always see what they're even giving up for something like this. It kind of looks like more depth to end the season, really. I still think, well, this looks like a trade where they have to make more. So we could still continue on, probably needing a righty bat and still needing a lefty arm in case they believe in Deal. I'm still kind of going off this right now. You're breaking news, and now I'm trying to figure out what the heck just happened.
Well, me too. And Naquin, I get. I mean, you're adding a left-handed, a solid outfielder. You know, probably it's going to cost Jankowski his job, I would think.
Yeah, first thing off my head, I think Jankowski's played his last game this year, even though I don't know if Naquin can ever really field center field. He might have had one game there, but this is probably the end of Jankowski. And then so that's interesting. The other lefty seems like a guy where you're just going to add him to the mix of depth guys to fill in, I guess, for the rest of the year.
I'm not finding anything on Philip Deal.
He's like a guy. You don't even want to look at his ERA. His ERA is like 11. So, yeah, it's not really. I think he's
all
acquired.
Right.
I could. Yeah.
All right, well, maybe the Mets have another deal in mind, no pun intended. Maybe they have, you know, maybe this is a depth guy. Maybe they're going to trade, you know, a minor, like you're saying. They have these guys in the lower minor leagues. I don't see Deal in the major league rosters. He was never on their major league roster, was he?
I mean, he's a guy that many years of control. So maybe they just, somebody felt they see something in him, and now they can have him controllable for a bunch of years. And probably have him on some kind of taxi squad and be the yo-yo guy for this year and next year and the year after as an option. So, I mean, this looks like, you know, this is the move where all the fans are going to be yelling and screaming, but it's probably a move where they have things in mind, like you just said, right off the top of our heads. This might be the end of Jankowski. And I kind of love Jankowski, but it looks like, you know, Naquin's got a little bit more power, more of a right fielder, but that might be the end of that. So now you're still adding a little bit more power there. And this guy's probably just going to be in another long line of lefties to just kind of get a shot here and there, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, depth piece for sure. Naquin, I could see it. You know, Jankowski, he can run and he can play defense, but my God, he hasn't hit at all. And granted, it's unfair because he doesn't play, but when he does play, he's kind of a give up. There wasn't much of a difference between him and Ender and Ciarte, really. And maybe Naquin is just, okay, look, you're sacrificing some speed, probably sacrificing some defense. If you have to pinch it for Nimmo gets hurt, something like that, Marte becomes your center fielder. And Deal is just, and Naquin is just a better version, you know, a little bit better bat. Mike, your thoughts on, I know this is obviously very fresh, you don't want to say anything about this trade, but about what seems to be the Epler philosophy of bringing in a lot of solid players instead of shiny new toys.
Well, there's something to be said for adding depth and having it available and ready to step in. I'm looking at Deal. And, you know, some of these numbers are frightful. I'm intrigued. I'm curious. You know, I don't want to be a negative Nelly, but, you know, sometimes you just deal in a wealth of pedestrian players. And, you know, nobody's really popping out. So if he sees value in them, okay. But at the same time, I'm not going to be too rough on Billy Epler. This is his first season, and, you know, he was handed a mess. It's his job to clean it up. And for now, you know, his responsibility is to fortify this team and strengthen them and, you know, protect their first-place standing. If he thinks these guys can get it done or help, I'll have to wait until the results are in, because I just don't know how to rate these players. To me, they're all pedestrian.
They are. I mean, nobody's going to jump up and down because you got Tyler Naquin. But on the other hand, if you have to bring in, you know, look, bottom of the ninth inning, you're down to, you know, the other team has a righty on the mound. Would you rather have Tyler Naquin up or Travis Jankowski? I think the choice is obvious. It's not an Ohtani, but it's a guy who can fill a need, right? And so, you know, you're looking at a guy here who's a .269 hitter, which is as average as it comes, 774 OPS, which is not bad, not great, not bad. He's not a big home run hitter. He had a season where he hit 14 and then last year he hit 19. Got a little juice in the bat. Again, not going to break the bank, but a solid acquisition. And we can't look at this out of context. You know, whatever happens over the course of the next 3 days is really what will matter. 4 days is really what will matter. If this is all the Mets do, it's a failure. If this is, and I fully believe that it is, the beginning of other moves, we'll just have to, the jury will be out. So guys, as we wrap it up, I want to throw out another name that I've heard rumored for the Mets. And it's a name, you know, and I think I know where Mike's going to come out on this one, but we'll play it out. So the San Francisco Giants are, I don't know, they're not having a good year. No shock there. I think last year it was just a weird season for them. They're not having a great year. They're not playing well. There's talk that they may sell, and I saw some stuff bandied about today. That if they sell, the Mets should be in on Wilmer Flores, because right-handed bat to go along with the big as the left-handed DH. Flores this year is having a very Flores season. He's never hit for a high average, really. You know, last year he did, but I actually he didn't really. He's hitting .245 this year, .763 OPS. He does have 14 home runs. That's who he is. Not a high average hitter. He'll hit some home runs. I think those walk-offs are a fluke, so forget that, in my opinion. He'll hit you some home runs. He'll hit you about .250, .260. Highly unathletic player who is defensively challenged everywhere except first base. Okay. I've never been a Wilmer Flores fan ever. Never will be. I hope they don't get him. I know Mike. Mike doesn't usually like to go back and revisit the past. So, Mike, what would be your thoughts on bringing him?
No, you're right. I really can't add much more. Being there, done that. There's a reason why he's not here.
So you're not, Ernest, would you be in favor of reuniting with Wilmer Flores?
I mean, if they wanted to give it a shot, I would think of it like I'm thinking right now on Nate Quinn, where names like Jankowski and Dom Smith may no longer have a place as it stands already. And even if you brought in a Wilmer, again, that means probably the end of Dom Smith and or the end of J.D. Davis. Now, at the end of the day, push comes to shove. If you're like, you know, pressing my arm and say pick one, I would probably off the top of my head take Wilmer Flores over J.D. Davis in the role of what that role would be. But then to be honest, same thing, pushing my arm. Do you want Mark Vientos to be called up or do you want J.D. Davis? I know there's a lot of people out there that would love that opportunity to have a Vientos play the same role. I don't know if that would work minor league-wise with a guy like Vientos who perennially starts slow every time he gets to a new level. So I'm worried that if he comes up and goes 1-for-20 with 12 strikeouts, he'll be booed out of Citi Field. So I think at the end of the day, Dom, Jankowski, and J.D. Davis are the Mets now quietly finding all of their replacements. And even a guy like Flores, which would be hysterical, but it would also be a version of finding replacements for these guys who all have more power, by the way. Because even these numbers of Wilmer Flores is more than all of those guys combined by a long shot, and then some with the year. So that's it looks like off the top of my head, they're at least they've been adding power so far in Vogelbach and even Naquin. And with even Perez, kind of, I made that joke on Twitter. The guy has as many home runs as like all of the catchers and J.D. Davis and Don Smith combined this year, which is kind of funny, not funny. So in a way, the Mets are probably at least trying to add some pop. Like I said, bats 6-9 in the order when it's getting kind of scary and embarrassing and everyone's freaking out. Now you're going to add extra guys who may hit a home run in that lineup. So it would be pretty funny. I doubt it's happening. But again, at the end of the day, I think I would choose him over a couple of guys right now and on the active roster or maybe not semi-active with the Dom situation.
Well,
those are great points.
Those are really good points. You put it like that, I'm not a Wilmer Flores fan, but would I rather have Wilmer Flores or J.D. Davis? Rather have Wilmer Flores, absolutely. So, I mean, I think Mets fans kind of put him on a pedestal because of the walk-offs, which, again, I think were fluky. The guy's an average player, maybe slightly below average, in my opinion, to put everything together. He's not this, you know, he's not this iconic guy that some Mets fans think he is. But anyway, but I think you're right. You know, I think what the Mets are doing here is they're saying, look, we've had DH is a disaster. We get nothing from our catching position. We're kind of weak offensively in general, so we're gradually going to weed out the guys who didn't produce, the Dom Smith, the J.D. Davis, the Jankowski. We're not going at the top. We're going at the bottom, and we're going to replace them. You know, if you guys are old enough and you remember when everybody had vinyl albums and there were CD upgrades, we're going to give you a CD, right? The same album, but in CD form. It was an upgrade. So that's what they're doing. They're upgrading those positions. They're doing a little bit better. They're getting guys in who are better than the guys they had. They're not superstars, but they're upgrades. And I think that's what we're going to say. Okay.
Even the more information. Some more information just came in. So basically, the Reds basically just acquired 2 lottery tickets from the Mets. So that time will tell, but it might take 3-4 years before fans can start complaining about them.
Right. Jose Acuna and Hector Rodriguez. I believe Hector Rodriguez pitched in some spring training games. I remember that name. I believe Acuna did as well. But then, you know, you can't.
Well, if it's the outfielder. If it's the outfielder, it might be the 18-year-old outfielder who's playing for the who played briefly for the St. Lucie Mets and went back to the Florida Coast League. So if that's what it is, they just basically got two lottery tickets. So I don't want to make that. I don't want to make fun of that and put that down at all. We're not going to know for multiple years. That's what these lottery tickets are for. If you're getting hopefully some form of legit depth where a Naquin is replacing guys like Jankowski and Dom, and you get a new lefty to kind of play with and toy with and yo-yo up and down AAA and majors, which can have value, it's rough to give up lottery tickets because you never know what's going to happen.
Right. It's not an Alvarez or a Beatty, but it's a lottery ticket. And you could be looking at a lottery ticket that turned out to be the winner. So, gentlemen, we have come to the end, essentially. I would like to do an open forum. If there's anything else you'd like to bring up for discussion, I'll just throw it out there. If anybody has anything, you know, we've talked about the play on the field. We've spent most of our time together talking about the trading deadline. We had the opportunity to break some news, which is fantastic. Anything you got on your minds that we haven't talked about?
Gil Hodges is finally in the Hall of Fame. That's it.
Good ad. Very good. What do you think? I'm going to throw this out real quick, guys. Cohen the other night said it would be good if they shut the game down on a Sunday, no games, and just the Hall of Fame inductions, everybody would watch, and it wouldn't be competing with games. What do you think of that?
It makes sense to me. You want to make more of an event out of something that you want to respect and appreciate, so why not?
Mike?
I think it's a good idea. They need to revamp the whole All-Star Game event and, you know, learn how to promote that game better. That would be a good idea.
Agreed. I'm not sure a Sunday is the way to do it because, let's face it, revenue drives the day, and that's probably the day you get your best attendance at the ballpark. But I would agree with having no games on a Thursday night or something like that. And saying, okay, no games tonight. We're going to, you know, if you want to tune into ESPN or insert name of network, Hall of Fame ceremonies, that's all you got. If you want baseball, that's what you have. This way the owners don't scream, I'm missing a Sunday gate. But you have non-competition for your Hall of Fame induction. Just a thought. Gentlemen, it has been an absolute blast talking Mets baseball with you for the past hour and 23 minutes. At this point, I'd like to give a special thanks to our guest, Ernest Dove. Ernest, before we let you go, if you could remind everybody the work you do and where they could find that work, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, again, everyone, if you could continue to support all of us, local sports content providing freelance, amazing people. I'm also a part of the Sports Report. I'm a part of Sports Wire Radio. It's SportsWire Radio. You can find us on sportnarium.com/player. That's sportnarium.com/player. 24/7, talking all kind of different sports, a lot of different things going on. And you can also find us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/thesportsreport2019. Where you can see a lot of the interviews that I've had with some players, even some coaches here and there. Hopefully I'll have some more things cooking up in the near future, talk with some more players, including Carson Seymour, who I believe, you know, Mike just mentioned. I interviewed Carson Seymour recently, so I consider him a friend of the show. So shout out Carson Seymour, by the way, for another dominating outing for a guy who honestly didn't even know he was going to be a starter this year. And they told him, nope. We thought you were really good in college as a reliever, but do you want to start? And here he is eating innings now in high A, racking up strikeouts. So all of a sudden, he's become a guy to look out for as a starting pitcher up the levels for the Mets. So shout out to him, and obviously shout out all minor leaguers, by the way, because that's still what I do. I love it. I love it when you get all the way to the majors. Like one of my favorites, Luis Guillorme, all these years following him since the minor leagues, from high A to the majors. This is what I do. So please continue to support me, continue to support everyone here on this show, And also just, you know, support your local minor leaguers.
No, that sounds great. Thanks, Ernest. And Mike, my friend, what work do you do outside of the Metsian podcast? And I know you do some stuff with Sam and some blogging. So tell people where they can find your stuff.
The Brooklyn Trolley Blogger. And that's where I just have fun being a sports fan. Talk about a wide variety of subject matter, mostly baseball, though. So you can go there and check it out. Right now I'm in the middle of the 1890 Brooklyn bridegroom season. But I want to echo what Ernest said about minor leaguers. It's a lot of fun for me to get, you know, an early look at these guys here in Brooklyn with the Cyclones as Ernest gets in Florida with the St. Lucie Mets, and watching them progress through the system and ultimately arriving in Queens. It's a lot of fun. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at a program signed by Brandon Nimmo when he was with the Cyclones. It's on my wall right here. So, you know, we talked about a lot of things, Rich. You mentioned the vinyl records. We mentioned the Mayor's Trophy game. And we said Skylab. So I just got to leave off with, you got to believe. You know, let's keep it in the 70s. You got to believe. That's my mindset.
Love it, love it. All we need are some neon signs, like some neon baseball figures, right? Or some chips, like some blue and orange chips as you go up the ramps, right?
Right.
So, all right, guys. The last thing we always do this, and our colleague in absentia, Mr. Sam Maxwell, would not be happy if we did not do a last word, which is what we do, and we should probably remember that. We give you a chance to say a last word or a phrase and what's on your mind as we head into, I know for the Red Sox, they said during the game when I was watching it, it's their 100th game. The Mets are a game or two behind that. But we are definitely turning into the stretch run in the last 60-plus games. So, Ernest, any last word, any last thought you have as we sign off?
The Wilpon era ended, everybody.
Great. It did, because we're talking about being buyers, and money's not an object, so what more proof do you need, right? So thank you, Ernest, for that. Mike, last word, last thought from you.
My last word is countdown. Countdown to that five-game series against the Braves in early August. We got to play Miami and Washington first, but countdown. The countdown is on. That series can make or break the season for either team. I'm looking forward to it, Rich.
You know, I have a lot more anxiety about that series than I did about the Yankees series. Not even close, really, because you're right. That five-game series got, you know, if the Mets ever swept the Braves, they'd pretty much sweep them away. If the Braves ever swept the Mets, they'd go into first place. It'll likely be a 3-2 one way or the other, but we'll see. That's a baseball. That's what this great game is all about. So I'd like to thank everyone for spending a part of your night with us, or if you're listening to the archive version, thank you for doing that. The Metsian podcast, Sam, Rich, and Mike, would not be anything without you listening, so we really do appreciate it. Like to make a special thanks again to our guest, Ernest Dove. Ernest, always a pleasure talking major and minor league baseball with you. Michael, my good friend, thank you for another engaging Mets conversation. We've been doing this for almost 9 years. No, more than 9 years, 9.5 years now. And it seems like it's gone by fast. So Mike, always a pleasure. Everyone, I'm not as good as Sam at this, but I'll give it a try. Let's go, Mets. Enjoy. The Mets are a good baseball team. Yes, there are going to be some ups and downs the rest of the way. You may not love the trade deadline, but we have a good ball club. We have a committed ownership. It's fun. Let's enjoy it. Let's go, Mets. Everybody have a great night.
Good night, all. Good night, Ernest. Good night, Metsville.